This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is part two of today's Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. A reminder, you can send your questions to radioprogram, one word, radioprogram@AOL.com. So in part one, Layla, you previewed a question that we're about to tackle about a very nasty condition. Say the words. What's the question?
Mike is writing, Dr. Hoffman, I'm a big fan of your work. I very much enjoy your podcast. I wonder if you have any info with the orphan disease hidradenitis suppurativa. She has it. This is for someone I'm trying to help. She has it on the area of her chest and in the groin.
Right.
She's had it for years.
Okay. So what it is, I mean, it is actually, as yucky as it sounds, hidradenitis suppurativa. And the second word, suppurativa, comes from the word suppurative, which means like pus laden, that, you know, let literally leaks pus. And hidradenitis suppurativa is an extreme form of skin infection. Acne-like, but with boils that form whiteheads that are extremely painful and inflamed and red, and sometimes burst and leak pus. It's nasty. I haven't heard that it occurs on the chest, but I have heard, you know, mostly it occurs in the underarm area or in the groin area, and it's nasty. So it's a very tough condition to treat medically. It's usually treated with antibiotics, but only with partial success. And we've had a couple of patients with this. It's not that common. It is, as he states, an orphan disease. But it's not, and it's not very rare. It's just not that common. And from a conventional standpoint, they've made a discovery that a medication used for treatment of certain cancers can actually help it. The medication is Rituxan or adalimumab, which is, in this case, it's Humira, which is adalimumab, but also Rituxan, which is rituximab. These are monoclonal antibody medications that are actually immunosuppressive. So the suggestion is that it goes beyond just an infection. It's a severe inflammatory disorder, and you can shut it down either but with systemic or even local injections of these medications. I'm not sure. I'm not seeing a patient managed that way. I'm not sure if that's going to pan out as the definitive treatment, but it seems to help. I would approach this as we approach many forms of skin infection like acne with an anti-inflammatory diet, getting rid of food allergens, certainly getting rid of sugar because sugar always makes infections worse. And we would also use olive leaf that is a natural antibiotic. We might use other things like oregano or a potent form of garlic called Alimax. These are some natural antibiotics that may, in a more gentle way, suppress the bacteria that are associated with this, giving probiotics to, you know, restore the gastrointestinal tract because we know that has something to do with immunity. And, you know, there may be disturbed bacterial balance in the body that allows these bacteria to proliferate. You know, so these adequate vitamin D, I'm sure vitamin D could play a role in modulating immunity to help the immune system work more efficiently. Things like vitamin C, zinc, but also vitamin C.
Both are good for the skin.
Right.
Okay.
Great. And vitamin C.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think those are some of the things that could make a difference. And if indeed there's an issue of inflammation, we might use anti-inflammatory nutrients like omega-3 fatty acids or curcumin. These are some, you know, there are certain conditions where I know for sure there's a protocol. You know, like I know for sure there's a protocol for Alzheimer's disease. I know there's a certain protocol for prostate cancer. These are common conditions, but this is an uncommon condition, and that's where we have to use our imagination a little bit as integrative physicians and apply principles that we derive from other types of more common infections to this very severe manifestation of a skin infection.
Yeah. Oh, Mike, best of luck with your friend.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
It's a devastating condition because it's not cosmetically it's unattractive, but it's also very painful, and it's often causes patients a lot of psychological distress because it is very life altering.
Mm.
Yep.
Mm. Best of luck to you, Mike.
Yep.
We've got a very interesting email from Connie. Connie is a 58-year-old female. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I have a question about the overproduction of growth hormone. Mm-hmm. I have a higher level of growth hormone.
Okay.
I've had the test. I'm under care for it. Mm-hmm. There is no pituitary tumor. Nothing like that was
mm-hmm.
found.
Mm-hmm.
I do have the symptoms of joint pain, sweating, and fatigue.
Right.
A lot of people my age want more growth hormone. I would love to give people mine.
Yes.
What can I do to lower it naturally?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, this is interesting. This is a person who has a condition called acromegaly, which is excess production of growth hormone. Now, there's a big craze these days. It's died down a little bit to administer growth hormone as an anti-aging treatment. And there's no question that growth hormone can make you look really awesome. It can cut down your body fat. It can make your muscles bigger. And, from baseball, when you look at some baseball players like Canseco, what's his name? I don't know his first name, but, you know, typical baseball players who really, that's not your forte.
I am so not a jock. Okay.
Right, I hear that. But, you know, you see the transformation, like these sort of skinny kids turn into, you know, monsters. And it's not just that they're lifting weights in the weight room. They're taking growth hormone. Their bodies are changing. So is this something that we all want to do as we age to forestall aging? I'm not sure because if you get it wrong and you use too much and it's hard to get it just right, you can create some of these side effects like joint pain. I'm also concerned about the risk when you have a lot of growth hormone floating around your body for promoting the growth of undesirable things like cancer. So I know of several high profile celebrities who for sure were using growth hormone who ultimately died of cancer. Now, is that a coincidence? Possibly, but you know, it may be that the growth of their cancer was stoked by their use of growth hormone. Is there a natural way? No, there's not a natural way. I think there's a medication that's designed to block growth hormone. I think it's called somatostatin, if I'm not mistaken. Conventional management by an endocrinologist is usually the best way to address that. And, you know, the other thing about growth hormone is there's this thing called telomeres, which are control the number of cell replications that you can have before your body gives up the ghost. You know, we're all programmed for eventual obsolescence and death. We have a certain number of cell replications that we're programmed to have. And if you use growth hormone is really going to help you rev your cellular machinery, but you may run out of telomeres sooner. And so what is called an anti-aging therapy may ultimately be a therapy that makes you look great for a while, but that could ultimately lead you to crash and burn earlier.
Wow. Die young, stay pretty.
Yeah, that's about it.
Oh, my. Wow. Well, Connie, best of luck to you, and thank you for this
unusual question.
Very thoughtful question.
I'm pretty sure there's not anything in the natural armamentarium for treating this condition to get it, mm-hmm. you know, it's easier to replace something that's low than to turn down something that's high.
Right, right. Okay. We've got another question here. I don't have a name. We've got an email. Does taking fish oil or other supplements in the morning break your overnight fast? Well, first of all, when you take something like fish oil, you likely don't want it to get on an empty stomach.
Right, that's a good point.
It will be better absorbed with food, right. I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So you're obviously going to break your fast if you're going to eat something to take your supplements, but just taking your supplements alone?
Yeah. So here's an interesting thing. You know, why is this guy asking this question, and what's the big deal, breaking the fast? What's the problem here? What he's, I think, angling towards is the notion that intermittent fasting has been shown to rev the body's machinery and maybe is useful as an anti-aging strategy. We know that if you underfeed people by about 30 or 40%, they may live longer. This is based on animal research. We're not entirely sure it's applicable to humans. But boy, that's tough, right? Telling people that they got to eat 30, 40% less. That's not happening for me, I'll tell you. You know, I'm not going to...
That's going to be hard.
In order to live like a few more years longer, you know, that I'm going to starve myself? I don't think so. So how do you replicate that? Well, in a way that's more manageable. What some people do is they do a 5-2 program. They'll eat normally for 5 days a week and then pick 2 days. That's the Dukan program, I think, where it's popular in Europe, where you eat 500 calories 2 days a week. So very light eating 2 days a week. It's kind of a quasi-fast, you're under-eating, and therefore you might get some of that benefit. What you could also do is you can do a longer cessation of eating between your nighttime meal and your first morning meal. Now, we tell people we emphasize the importance of breakfast. You've got to have a big breakfast. Well, a few times a week, what I do is I go a really long time between my last meal the night before if I have an opportunity to sleep in late. I never do this before work because I always like to tank up on some protein and fat and, you know, something that's offering me some satiety before I go to work early in the morning. But if I don't have to report to work early in the morning, I may wait till like 11 o'clock, like I did this morning, and you know, exercise and do my thing. And that affords me about a 14-15 hour period where I'm not eating. That is actually thought to be helpful for getting rid of cellular debris, rebooting your cellular machinery, and maybe, you know, burning some fat down. For sure, it'll do that.
Right.
So that's a strategy.
Expanding the mitochondria.
Yeah.
Keeping the telomeres longer.
Absolutely. It's been shown to do that. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a more, I think, workable way, viable way to do that.
What is it? Sirtuins?
Yes. Yes.
Sirtuin? Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The very self-same things that seem to be targeted by resveratrol also respond to a little bit of caloric deprivation and, you know, intermittent fasting.
Yeah. All right. So, okay. Thank you for that question.
Yep.
We've got an interesting little story and a question from Karen. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm 52, and for the past 2 years, I haven't felt as full of energy. My mood hasn't been as upbeat. I've struggled with my weight. My hair has been thinning. So 2 weeks ago, I began taking kelp supplements containing some iodine, some kelp. My hair stopped coming out in my brush almost immediately, and I feel more energetic and positive.
Interesting.
I've had my internist check my thyroid. She said it was fine,
right.
But there must be a connection. Anyway, is it safe for me to continue taking kelp?
Right.
She's taking about 600 milligrams and about 300 micrograms of iodine.
Interesting.
Which is probably twice what you'd find in a multi,
Yeah, this is interesting because, okay, first of all, the fact that the doctor says that her thyroid is fine, that's pretty common that you may have subclinical low thyroid, but it's not going to show up on a blood test. So what does iodine do to the thyroid? It's actually a cofactor in the production of thyroid hormone. So if you don't have enough iodine, tyrosinase isn't going to work. which is used to make T3, I believe, which is the active mm-hmm. form of thyroid, which is what drives your cellular metabolism. And so maybe, in some cases, a little extra iodine is going to fix that problem. I tend to be a little skeptical that just nutritional supplements alone will normalize an underactive thyroid. Partially, it's because I'm a medical doctor and I have the prescription pad and I can prescribe natural thyroid. Sometimes people with a naturopathic orientation who are non-prescribers believe more in the use of things like selenium and zinc and iodine to and tyrosine, perhaps, to rev the thyroid. But, you know, it makes perfect sense that if the person is iodine deficient, that taking a little extra iodine is going to restore thyroid function, at least for a while, until the thyroid becomes so weak that you actually require some outside prescription thyroid medication.
Right, right. Maybe a little zinc, a little selenium, at least in the meantime. I know I've had some clients come in who pretty much are almost going to need thyroid replacement, but they're insisting on not taking any.
Right.
So I will give them some additional zinc and selenium. It takes them for a while. Some people do just fine, and I don't see them then for a long time. And then other people, we find that, you know, the zinc and the selenium, it's run its course, or is done as much as possible. Like you say, the nutrition will only go so far, and they will need thyroid replacement. So
yeah.
That's true. Yeah. So, Karen, you could probably continue taking your kelp, your iodine, for the time being, and see how all that goes.
So I think I have to mention that there are some studies that suggest that excess iodine can actually suppress the thyroid. So
there's the double-edged sword. Yeah.
So that the amount in question there, I think, is not likely to do that. But
right.
There's studies, most of this research comes from Japan, where the Japanese sometimes consume enormous amounts of seaweed. And some studies have shown that in big seaweed consumers, that even the natural thyroid that you get from kelp, if taken in excess, can suppress thyroid function.
Yeah. So, did you want to be... Well, Dr. Hoffman, the thing that we administer here is the iodine test.
Right.
Which is often helpful.
We do an iodine load test to see if patients have a need for more iodine, and that's worth doing to establish whether your iodine levels are okay. It's a urine test, actually.
Yeah. It's a urine test. And iodine is helpful not only for thyroid, but also for breast health.
No question. We get remarkable results when we give a product called Iodoral, which is Lugol's iodine, to patients with extreme breast tenderness, fibrocystic breasts. It is remarkable in its ability to protect the breast. Also, for breast cancer survivors, iodine is part of a preventive program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So we have time for one more question. Is there such a thing as a short question?
Yes. Okay. We've got, yes. Let's see here. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. My wife makes a great chicken soup, but it's unclear to me if what she's doing is making it less healthy. She puts it in the refrigerator in a stainless steel pot, and the next day it has a layer of fat on top, which she skims off and throws away.
Mm-hmm.
Is throwing away the fat instead of using it a good idea?
Well, my grandma would have been... appalled by that, because she was a Polish Jew from Warsaw, and when she was growing up, it was a time of austerity. In fact, I think her mother used to sell chickens in the market in Warsaw, and you know, I actually have a picture of that somewhere of a woman, you know, a woman bundled up against the cold, wearing a, you know, like a babushka, you know, the things they wear around the head, head covering.
Right.
And she looks kind of miserable, and she's standing in front of a stand where there's two very scrawny chickens hanging by their feet from the stand. And believe you me, they were, the, you know, these people were with chickens the way Native Americans were with buffaloes. They would use, you know, every part of the animal, and they would absolutely they would skim off the chicken, I mean the chicken fat, and use it for cooking. Use it as a way of sautéing, you know, meat or vegetables, and for the caloric value that
schmaltz.
It has. Schmaltz. It's schmaltz exactly, and they would even use this part of the chicken. A lot of people discard. Which is the tail of the chicken, and they would saute it and make what's called gribbinets out of that, which is like a sprinkling that you can put on vegetables, or you can put whatever in your. I don't even know how to use it anymore because it's such a. People are so phobic about fat that all this stuff has gone down the tubes. Except if you go to there's some eateries in New York which exult in this old style cooking. Like Sammy's Romanian restaurant here in New York is very famous for its high fat traditional cooking, and you could really put away you really put the feed bag on at Sammy's Romanian restaurant. It's a pilgrimage for some people. So the answer is that's not bad. You shouldn't take the fat off. However,
and the chicken should be organic. The chicken should absolutely be organic.
Yeah, that's the other thing is the bad part of the fat is that if the chicken's not organic, the chicken will concentrate some of the environmental pollutants, and therefore it's not so good. But, you know, I guess there, for some types of cooking, you may want just the broth. You may not want the fat, but then it's perfectly fine to skim off the fat and save it in a, you know, little ramekin so that you can use the fat for something else. That's the only thing. But, I do exactly, you know, these days, I consume a lot of organic chickens. I either make them or sometimes I buy them from there are some good health food places that make organic chickens that are pretty clean and natural. And I'm always salvaging the carcass of the chicken and the bones. And then I have a crock pot that's going virtually 24/7 that I just throw those carcasses into and I make a broth and it's got fat and it's got the collagen from the bones and it's a very nutritious substance. These days they even
sell
sell this sometimes in health food stores, you know, organic broth or organic gelatin because it's got really healing properties in the gastrointestinal tract and for the body as a whole. So and I use that as a soup stock, or sometimes I'll just have you know, a glass of broth, which is very it's kind of a nice thing to have sometimes in the morning. You know, you wake up and you have a, you know, some rich chicken broth.
Bowl of soup. It's going to replace the coffee mug.
Yes, it will. But I'm still going to drink my decaf.
Sure, sure. I mean, there are purveyors of bone broths, and people are having a cup of bone broth in the morning and as opposed to a cup of coffee. But, all good.
It's all good. All right. Well, so concludes this edition of our Q&A with Layla, our weekly podcast, part of the Intelligent Medicine series. And I'll remind you that Layla is also available via telephone for consultations across the country and around the world. So if you find it logistically challenging to physically get to the Hoffman Center in New York, well, we're very happy to see you. I'll see you in person. But if you want merely a nutritional consultation, it's a more economical pathway by which you can access the expertise that we share with you each week here on Q&A with Layla. So check out drhoffman.com to find out how you can become a patient of the Hoffman Center or a patient of Layla. We're very happy to accommodate your needs. All right. Thanks very much for joining us this week, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.